case of the morning, which is number 043307, the United States against Herron. Mr. Berman.
May it please the court, I'm Morris Berman. I represent Willie Herron. In this case, I represented him in the district court, and I'm representing him on appeal. Mr. Herron pled guilty to a one-count indictment, which involved 13.15 grams of cocaine base, and then he was subsequently sentenced on the basis of a finding to which he had not admitted and which was not found by a jury, that he had been involved in 117.62 grams of cocaine base delivered. And he got a sentence of 188 months using, we would contend, simply the old guidelines, criminal history, and offense severity algorithm. And it's our argument quite straightforward and simple, which is that the court was required under 18 United States Code 3553A to consider certain factors, and most particularly with a case involving cocaine base, pertinent policy statements of the Sentencing Commission, and the need to avoid unwarranted sentencing disparities. And after considering those factors, after considering the 3553A factors, then impose a sentence which is sufficient but not greater than necessary. And although Judge Shabazz made passing reference to the statute, it's our contention that he did not consider these A5 and A6 factors. And with respect to cocaine base offenses, there are some very significant commentaries and pertinent policy statements by the United States Sentencing Commission. And those policy statements tie right into the need to avoid unwarranted sentencing disparities. And those are discussed at length in United States versus Smith, Judge Adelman's opinion out of the Eastern District, and Judge Simon out of the Eastern District of New York, and out of the District Court opinion in Harris by Judge Robertson. Consistently, the pertinent policy statements of the Sentencing Commission in 1995, where they advocated a 1-to-1 ratio instead of the 20-to-1 ratio in 97, where there was a recommendation for a 5-to-1 ratio, and in 2002, where there was a recommendation for 20-to-1 ratio. Consistently, the Sentencing Commission has criticized the 100-to-1 ratio, and one of the reasons for that criticism is that it has led to unwarranted sentencing disparities, both in racial terms and in terms of similarly situated defendants. Again, it's our argument that although there was some passing reference made by the district court to 3553A, those particular factors, which really are pertinent to sentencing in a cocaine base or crack cocaine sentencing, were not considered. And the result of that was that an unreasonable sentence was imposed. And unless the court has any further questions, I'll reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Berman.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Mr. Anderson.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Robert Anderson. I'm an assistant United States attorney with the Western District of Wisconsin. I have the privilege of representing the United States in this matter. The interesting thing to note here, right off the bat, is this is an appeal of a sentence in which it is not disputed that the district court correctly applied the guidelines as they existed then and as they exist now. Correctly applied, calculated the guidelines, and applied them in an advisory manner, and considered, referred to, and recited factors in 3553A to arrive at a discretionary sentence that the district court, Judge Shabazz, thought appropriate. This is exactly the procedure that's now used by all the district courts in the wake of Booker, the Supreme Court Booker. And the government's position, very simply, is that where the court correctly determines the advisory guidelines and imposes a guideline, an advisory discretionary sentence using those guidelines in an advisory capacity, but using and referring to 3553A, as this court did, the sentence is not and cannot be an unreasonable one. Mr. Heron contends merely that Judge Shabazz didn't go through and recite all the specific factors in 3553A, which, as this court knows and recently noted in the George case in April, that's not necessary. What's important is that the court make a foundation of its sentence in 3553A, which is exactly what Judge Shabazz did. His other argument is that the district court didn't properly consider the factors in 3553A by not considering the disparity of the cocaine base ratio, which I would note is an issue that's been dealt with by this court numerous times. And first of all, before we even mention that, this latter issue about the cocaine base ratio isn't something that was raised by the appellant at the district court level in the sentencing. So he doesn't even get to the unreasonableness level before he has to cross the plain error. And it is not plain error, because plain error, you need something that is an error and something that is plain before you even go on to the other factors of plain error. And we don't have that here, because he cannot demonstrate either plain error or that this was unreasonable, because the district court actually applied the law as it existed, both the statutory and case law, as it existed back then, summer of last year, and as it exists today, as we stand here now. In this court's decisions throughout since the last 14, 15 years, there have been numerous challenges on various bases. In Lawrence in 1991, challenging the cocaine base ratio on due process grounds, it was upheld. In 1993, Chandler challenging it on equal protection grounds, similar to defendants' arguments. It was upheld on equal protection grounds. It was upheld in 1994 in the Smith case, cruel and unusual punishment challenge. It was upheld in Blanding in 1995 they said the cocaine base definition is not ambiguous, therefore the rule of lenity doesn't apply. And then this court again considered many of these very same arguments in 1997 in United States versus Richardson, and again rejected the due process, equal protection, and Eighth Amendment challenges to it. So Judge Shabazz applied the law as the law existed, and it still exists. So there could not have been plain error, and it was not unreasonable for the judge to imply it in that manner. And then the only contention left from the primary brief, apart from this ratio issue, is whether he adequately addressed the 3553 factors. And it's important to note there that Mr. Heron, going into the sentencing, knew that the guidelines were under challenge before the Supreme Court. This was after Blakely, after Seventh Circuit Booker, but before the Supreme Court Booker, so he knew those were challenged. He knew Judge Shabazz could and likely would impose a discretionary sentence looking at the guidelines because he had pled before the Blakely decision, and that's why the relevant conduct charges weren't pled to as well. So Heron's counsel specifically referred to factors he wanted Judge Shabazz, the court, to consider at sentencing under 3553A that were mitigating factors for his client, his client's personal histories, personal circumstances, his needs, and his cooperation with the police since his arrest. So you can't say that the judge didn't have those things in front of him and wasn't forced to consider those things, because that argument was made to the judge, and he had to have weighed those in making his decision. But the judge ultimately decided and cited the factors that were important to his decision to give the sentence within the properly calculated guideline range as an advisory method, what he considered the factors that were most important to the sentence: the seriousness and repetitive nature of Mr. Heron's conduct, the need to punish him, to deter him, the need to protect the community. All those things not only cited in the mentioned in the sentencing transcript, but cited in the statement of reasons. Heron's suggestion that he has to verbatim go through all the 3553 factors is not warranted by the law in this circuit. And so, in conclusion, a discretionary sentence imposed consistent with the requirements of Booker and used arrived at by properly using the guidelines, calculating them in an undisputed way, and using that as an advisory reliable indicator, where the court articulated its reasons under 3553A, and commented on those. Nothing more was required of the district court here, and this court should affirm that sentence as reasonable. If there are no other questions, I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Judge, it's our argument that in this post-Booker world, that as Judge Adelman wrote in the Ranum opinion, which is also cited in our brief, that in every case the courts must now consider all of the 3553A factors, not just the guidelines.
But does the court have to sua sponte consider them? The issue of the powder crack disparity was not raised in the district court. How much responsibility do we have to give the district judges?
Well, we would argue that is plain error. And
to not bring it up sua sponte.
Well, it's plain error to not consider pertinent policy statements of the Sentencing Commission, because that is a factor set forth specifically within the statute, which the court is directed to consider.
So it's 3553A. It really is your view that in the universe of all possible considerations, a district judge must envision every possible argument for a non-guideline sentence on a sua sponte basis? Is that really your argument?
Our argument is that there must be at least some evidence in the record that something other than criminal history and the amount of cocaine base is considered.
What is the responsibility of counsel in this case?
Well, we were in a world where it was all in flux, and 3553A at that time, either the guidelines were going to be, practitioners thought, out the window completely, or they were going to be back in as mandatory. And this hybrid, where now 3553A is a factor along with the guidelines as a factor, was really not envisioned. So this case came along at a time when I think we were all feeling our way. And I think the appropriate thing is to have some evidence that all of the factors in 3553A, not necessarily every conceivable argument, but at least all of the factors are considered. In further response to Mr. Anderson's argument about United States versus George, there at least, although it isn't set forth in any detail in that opinion, there is at least the statement that Chief Judge Randa stated his reasons for why he came to that conclusion and why he came to a non-guideline sentence. I think United States versus George is a somewhat different case than here, because what Chief Judge Randa came up with was a sentence which was below the advisory guideline level. And so Chief Judge Randa explained why he came to a level below that. In fact, it was this court's opinion that they didn't really understand why the government wasn't appealing on that one.
But isn't the lesson of George that district courts need not rehearse on the record all of the considerations that Section 3553A lists, that it's enough to accurately calculate the range and explain why, if a sentence lies outside the guideline range, that a defendant deserves more or less?
Well, I think it does, but there is also at least the indication that Chief Judge Randa explained why, and also the indication, and I think it is important, that in George it was less than the advisory guidelines sentence, so it would be hard to argue that it was unreasonable to not impose even less than that. Here, it's very clear that Judge Shabazz just topped him out and didn't have any consideration of these other factors. These other factors often would be factors you couldn't consider prior to Supreme Court Booker. Now you can, and a reasonable sentence, and imposing a reasonable sentence requires the application of those factors. Just one other thing with respect to the cases where constitutional challenges to the crack versus powder cocaine guidelines have been rejected. First of all, it seemed to me that all of the cases cited by the government preceded those pertinent Sentencing Commission policy statements. Secondly, we're not dealing with a constitutional challenge here, but rather, how do you get to a reasonable sentence? And our argument that a reasonable sentence requires the application of a statute of 18 U.S.C. 3553A. Sometimes that statute will conflict factors which were previously forbidden under 5H, etc. But in any event, that's how you get to a reasonable sentence. And that's why we contend that an unreasonable sentencing procedure and sentence was imposed here.
Thank you.
Unless the court has any other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Berman.
Thank you.
Mr. Berman, you served by appointment of the court, and you have our deep thanks for your fine efforts on behalf of your client. Indeed, our thanks to both attorneys, and the case will be taken under advisement.